Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about gambling in Pennsylvania. But up front, two mass shootings over the weekend in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, left 29 people dead and scores of others injured. The shooter in Texas is reported to have driven more than 8 hours to El Paso and targeted Latinos, according to a manifesto he left behind. We're still learning more about the Ohio killer and his motivation. But the nation is reeling from these two mass shootings that seem to happen every few weeks. After these events, we often hear from Americans and political leaders that say now is the time to do something with gun laws, mental health, or other contributing causes. Pennsylvania Democratic U.S. Senator Bob Casey wants the Senate called back into session to act on legislation that would require universal background checks on all commercial gun purchases. We're joined this morning by Senator Casey. Senator, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
So, first of all, Senator, your thoughts when you heard, this kind of was chapter one in El Paso and then the replay later Saturday, early Sunday morning in Dayton. Your thoughts on what happened?
Well, I think I'm like a lot of Americans when you consider the carnage here, the continuing carnage. The only way that can happen in Congress is for the majority leader to call us back and we've been calling on the majority leader for months now to schedule votes and debates so that we can actually have votes on background checks and a number of other measures.
Well, that has been, there was legislation that was passed in the democratically controlled House earlier this year. That legislation has been held up in the Senate because Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has not acted on it. It hasn't gone to the floor of the Senate. What would make you think that that would happen now?
Well, the likelihood is probably not high, but we have to continue to put pressure on. Scott, I think in this interview, I'm getting an echo, but I'll try to keep talking.
Yeah, it's not a good connection.
The majority leader has known for the 5 years he's been majority leader that this is the problem. It's about time that he scheduled votes on background checks and other measures because he's the only one who can do that. And he's the only one who can make sure that we actually have a debate and a vote on one of the most important issues the American people face. And the reason why these pieces of common sense gun measures have not even gotten a vote is because of one person, and that's the majority leader. It's about time that he schedule votes. We may not prevail in these. We may lose. But he should have a debate and votes on these measures, some of which are supported by 75 or 80 or 90% of the American people.
Universal background checks in this legislation on all commercial purchases. Now, would that include gun shows, online purchases?
Yes.
What about private sales?
Well, you've got to make sure that when a gun is transferred, that the person who is transferring that or receiving it doesn't have a criminal record. And if someone wants to carve out exceptions and make changes, we can consider a lot of the different ideas. You can't consider anything until you have a debate, until you have a vote on the floor. And if someone wants to amend it or change it, that's the time for them to do it. But to have no action, I mean, think about it. Mitch McConnell's been majority leader for more than half a decade, and he hasn't had a single vote on a major piece of gun legislation. Not once.
Now, Senator, the El Paso shooter supposedly bought the gun that he used, a fully automatic rifle. Now, that would have been illegal, but semi-automatic rifle online and apparently bought it legally. So would a universal background check have stopped that shooter from getting a gun?
Well, in some instances, some of these examples, there may not be a specific implication of a background check. So that's why you have to have other measures. We had for many years in the 90s a ban on military-style assault weapons. and that saved a lot of lives. We should do the same thing again.
And you're saying that would be part of the debate if the Senate Majority Leader called the Senate back into session. The El Paso shooting.
I would hope. But look, the only way you're going to have a measurable impact on this issue is to pass a series of common sense measures that have been blocked for years because Republican members of Congress are pressured by the gun lobby, the gun manufacturers, and those that represent them to not take action.
Senator, the El Paso shooting was allegedly motivated by hate. The shooter wrote that he wanted to stop the invasion of Texas by Latino immigrants. And it's been pointed out that this is some of the same language that President Trump has used when talking about the influx of immigrants at the southern border. Now, some of your colleagues have gone as far as saying that the president is complicit in the Texas shooting because of his rhetoric. What do you think?
Well, number one, I said this a couple of days ago. I've said it before. I'll say it again. When it comes to immigration and issues relating to migrants and issues relating to the asylum process, the president does four things over and over again. It's fear and smear and demonize and divide. He never says things that are constructive and positive about how to fix the problem by getting the 2013 immigration bill, which would have provided $45 billion for border security and would have begun to fix the problem. If he came out and said, I want that kind of legislation on my desk and I'll sign it, and I want to fix the asylum system and treat people with dignity in addition to securing the border, then we would have a mood in this country which would be a lot more affirmative. So every time the president says something negative and hateful about migrants and immigrants, he makes the problem worse, number one. Number two, I would hope the president would stand up and say, once and for all, I condemn white nationalism, and if you're a white nationalist, we're going to confront you. We're not going to allow white nationalism to lead to violence. That would help if the president said something like that. Why doesn't he condemn white nationalists in the same fashion he condemns immigrants? That would be a start. Now, I'm not going to say the president caused what happened in El Paso. But it sure as hell doesn't help when you use racist, divisive language over and over again, and you have the biggest megaphone in the world. The president of the United States has the biggest megaphone in the world. He should use it constructively, positively, as a leader, and not as a combatant and a purveyor of negative, hateful, racist language.
Senator, I know you have to run here in a minute, but one final question. In my introduction, I described how we seem to have these mass shootings every few weeks in the United States. And every time we hear from people who say, now is the time, something has to be done. Will anything be different this time?
I think it's possible because of the nature of this, not just this weekend, but the whole week when you think about it. And I hope that people in both parties, even if they don't want to listen to a member of Congress, listen to the FBI director. He said, quote, and this is July 23rd, quote, a majority of the domestic terrorism cases that we've investigated are motivated by some version of what you might call white supremacist violence, unquote. That's the FBI director. He's not talking about ISIS or terrorists from another country. He's talking about Americans who are white supremacists. That's a problem in addition to what I believe the actions we should take on the common sense gun measures.
But can laws be enacted that would help to fight this expansion of white nationalism?
Well, maybe, but maybe it's just that we focus on the problem and have an engagement by people across the country and communities to talk about it. And if they know of a friend or a cousin or a brother or a relative that is online, we need to talk about that and figure out a way to stop it. So it isn't necessarily a new law, but the idea that we just sweep this problem under the rug since Charlottesville, where the president said there were good people on both sides. There weren't good people on both sides. One side had people who were hateful and violent, and someone died in Charlottesville. That was the moment where the president should have exercised what's called presidential leadership and demonstrated that he can lead the country in a positive direction. He refused to do it then. I hope he doesn't refuse to do it now. But Congress can certainly have an impact on the prevalence of high-powered weapons on our streets. And my point is that if we pass a series of measures, series of laws, the cumulative effect on that might be that we have one less El Paso over the next 10 years. If that's what we get, that is well worth the legislative time and effort. But I think it would have more impact than that if we passed a number of common sense measures.
Senator Bob Casey, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott
Just to
Lamar.
Follow up a little bit on that conversation with Senator Casey, we will be addressing the issue of gun violence, mass shootings, a lot of the other contributing factors that went into these shootings in Ohio and Texas over the weekend. We will be focusing on them a little bit later this week. We did invite U.S. Senator Pat Toomey to appear on the program today. Senator Toomey, as many people are aware, was part of bipartisan legislation that would have required universal background checks, was defeated in the Senate in 2013. He is once again calling for that. Senator Toomey was unavailable this morning. Governor Tom Wolf may appear later in the program. The governor has called for state action on guns here in Pennsylvania, also white nationalism. We'll hopefully have the governor on the program a little bit later this week as well. A lot of other people that have a lot to say about this, but obviously it is one of those issues that we keep dealing with every few weeks, and we'll see if this time is any different. But I want to switch gears now. Pennsylvania is the nation's second largest gambling market after generating $3.3 billion in gaming revenue during the fiscal year that ended June 30th. Only Nevada produces more gambling money. That record-setting number probably will increase this year and in the future, as Pennsylvanians can now place bets online and can wager on sports, including fantasy sports. Down the line, mini casinos will open across the state and slot machines will operate at some truck stops. So what does it all mean for taxpayers? How do they benefit? Joining us today is Doug Harbach, spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board. Doug, good to see you today.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having us here. I know this is a difficult day, but and this is very minor compared to what's going on in the rest of the nation, but I'm happy to be here.
Also joining us is Eric Raskin, managing editor of U.S. Bets. Mr. Raskin, welcome to the show. And Brett Smiley, sports better, and editor of Sports Handle. Brett Smiley, welcome to Smart Talk. I assume those gentlemen are there. We'll find out
very
soon.
We'll fill in if they're not.
Yes, we will. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to weigh in on gaming here in Pennsylvania, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Doug, $3.3 billion in revenue generated from gambling here in Pennsylvania during the fiscal year that ended June 30th. I think almost $2 billion of that went into state coffers. Mm-hmm. How did we get to this point?
Well, I think the legislature did a smart thing in setting up the law back in 2004, which allowed slot machine gambling. Of course, later they expanded that into table game gambling. And now, of course, we're moving into other forms of gambling. Two things with Pennsylvania that makes this successful for us. Number one is the population. We've got a large population, one of the more populated states in the country. And much of the revenue and the play was being taken across the state lines, especially into New Jersey. Governor Rendell, when he was in office at that time, made the comment that a lot of tax dollars are being generated in New Jersey, and those are being generated through the play by Pennsylvania, and let's keep it within the borders, and that's what we've done. And the other thing that was really smartly done by the legislature was setting up a market that we could unfold that was more of a convenience market rather than a destination market. In New Jersey, you go to one location, Atlantic City. In Pennsylvania, the casinos were placed in the dense population areas of the state so that those who wished to participate in gambling in a casino could easily get to it and then return.
So that $3.3 billion, and as I said in the introduction, it's likely to increase as online gaming, it only started a month or so ago. Same with sports betting, which is a little longer. But there are additional revenues coming down the line. But before we even get to that, how do we set a record here in Pennsylvania? I mean, you just described what the legislature did and why it was effective, but when the revenue has increased, any idea why?
I think that we have given the consumer for that type of entertainment great choices. We brought in very established casino operators, whether they were the Harrah's of the world, the Sands, Penn National, other companies like that, and they've set up very attractive venues. They've continued to expand those venues beyond just the gaming, where they've put entertainment options, hotel options, food and beverage options. So while I say that we have a market of convenience, we've now also continued to expand into making those a bit of a destination where individuals can come and stay longer to participate in a lot of other things at the venue.
So the revenue that is generated, that's one thing. The money that goes into the state coffers, that's another. Any idea the economic impact that gambling has had on Pennsylvania?
Well, I can look around tangentially at some of the locations. I'm not aware of any that's been done, a study that's shown dollars and cents on that. But if you look at some locations, I can point out to Washington County below Pittsburgh and the Meadows Casino out there, a longtime racetrack, added a casino. I believe there's been up to five hotels that have been established around that facility. There is an outlet mall near there, other food and beverage areas, and I see that similarly around other places. I think if you go up to Bethlehem to their facility, the local people will tell you that they've seen the first new hotels being built in that city in many, many years, and a lot of economic spin out. And of course, each of them employ thousands of individuals who are spending money locally.
33,000 employees here in Pennsylvania in the gaming industry,
well,
is that correct?
I think about 16,000 with that. Now, if you also look at what's jobs that have been created or certainly have been saved by the establishment of the casinos at horse race tracks, that is very important too, because the spinoff there is purchasing within the agricultural community, more farms that have been established here to breed horses. So we've also had that very huge economic spinoff into the agricultural community, and thus the original name of the law was the Racehorse Development and Gaming Act, because its intent, along with things like property tax reduction and so forth, was to help the agricultural community.
Mm-hmm. All right, Eric Raskin, you write about gaming here in the United States, and you've written a lot lately about Pennsylvania because of the rollout of online gaming and sports betting. So, how is Pennsylvania viewed as a state for gambling? Eric Raskin, are you there? I guess he's not there. So we'll continue our conversation, Doug, and hopefully we can raise Eric Raskin and Brett Smiley here in just a moment.
If we run out of gambling things, I'll talk about anything.
Don't worry. We're not going to run out of gambling things. So a big question for a lot of people, and these are the broad context questions, Doug. Who does benefit? You talked about 2004 and originally this legislation that enabled gaming in Pennsylvania was... The money was supposed to be for property tax relief. It has happened to a degree, even though a lot of taxpayers don't realize it because they don't see a check. They don't realize what impact it has had. There have been a lot of critics who said it's not enough. So
What's changed since 2004? Who benefits from this $33 billion that has come into this, or $3.3 billion that has come into the state?
Let's talk about that issue right there with property tax reduction. Because even though we don't, as an agency, oversee that, that's money that goes to the Department of Revenue, it's paid out through a formula Department of Education developed and so forth, because we go out and talk a lot, that is a big area that people ask. And they want to know, I thought my property taxes were going to go away. I thought I was going to be relieved of my property taxes, thus property tax relief. That is a $14 billion nut that has to be solved by the Commonwealth if they want to move local taxes in the school district over to the state. At the best, we were going to produce about $1 billion a year in estimates for slot machine revenue to go toward that. So it really was a reduction that was being offered to the citizens of Pennsylvania, and they have been getting that for 13 years. And some of it has become real money that has been deducted. But as you said, there is no check that goes out. Instead, we urge people to look at their property tax bill, look at the homestead credit or homestead exclusion. That is the money that is being deducted off that comes directly from slots money. The thing why they don't know that is there's only a requirement by tax collectors to put a small blurb on there about property tax relief. It doesn't mention slot machines. It doesn't mention casinos. So when we go out, I'll ask people in an audience, let's say it's a Rotary Club or a Lions Club or a Chamber, I'll say, raise your hands if you're getting property tax reduction. And I might get one or two out of a batch of 30. Then I'll say, how many of you own a home? Everybody raises their hand. And I tell them, likely you are getting that reduction. You just don't know it. You need to look at your bill. But that has been real and coming to citizens of Pennsylvania. And also don't forget that there is a good bit of money that has gone for other areas into local areas, especially those that host a casino. They're getting millions and millions of dollars a year in their area. It's been used for parks. It's been used for road improvements. It's been used for emergency services. So there is a ripple effect for the casinos throughout the Commonwealth, and in particular in those areas that do host them.
But the expansion of 2017, the money generated, the revenue generated there was not designed specifically for property tax relief. It was to go into the general fund, correct?
Some of it. Some will definitely go there, such as money that's coming out of the new sports wagering. However, money that is coming from online casino-type games, the tax on that, which is very high in Pennsylvania, it's one of the reasons we're the number one in the United States in tax revenue from commercial casinos, that is also going toward the state gaming fund toward property tax relief. So we do expect that the online gaming market will produce some more revenue into that fund as it matures.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk about the expansion, and hopefully we can get Eric Rask and Brett Smiley on the phone here in just a few minutes. But you know, this has been a remarkable expansion. The legislation was approved by Governor Wolf, the legislature, in 2017. So it's been 2 years, but you know, a lot of things are working along with that. As I said, a remarkable expansion. It's like one of the biggest that any state in the country has dealt with, correct?
Correct. I think the biggest at one time that a state had to undertake. And I mean, we were up for the task. We also didn't want to greatly expand our staff. We didn't see the need for that. We just needed to take the current staff for the most part and give them new and additional work to do. And we've gotten it done and unfolded it. It is a big task because, you know, you have to undertake the writing of regulations. In particular, you have a lot of new vendors that we have to background. And remember, that's important in Pennsylvania. You have not seen any huge problems in Pennsylvania. People thought there would be huge crime problems and so forth coming in. And that's because we pay particular attention to individuals who are going to do business in the casino industry and now on the online communities, because that's where crime in the past in this kind of an industry got in the back door. And because those vendors and those other individuals and companies doing business are thoroughly vetted, We have not seen that issue. So we have rolled this out, I think, in a relatively quick time, but we also wanted to make sure that we did it correctly. I mean, there are some that might say, oh, why didn't this thing get rolled out, you know, within months? Because we wanted to do it correctly. Our main role in Pennsylvania isn't for the casinos, it is for the public at large in Pennsylvania. They're our audience, there is who we represent, and we want to make sure before any of these new products get out there that they have been fully vetted also and that they're ready to be out on the market and protect the citizens of PA who want to play them.
You know, not everyone is on board with this. With the expansion of gambling, the first thing that comes to mind for many people is that there will be more gambling addictions, for one thing. Those who are addicted to gambling, that they will have more opportunities. That's one thing. And there are those that philosophically disagree with the state expanding gaming to the point where it is and relying on that revenue. But let's talk about the gambling habit and those who can't control themselves. What's in place? Have you seen any have you seen any statistics that it is happening more because there are expansions? There has been expansion of gaming.
Not as of yet, because we're too early into it. I would say, again, you know, we pay particular attention. This for the board is very important. We did something a number of years ago, and not legislated, but we set up an Office of Problem and Compulsive Gambling within the Gaming Control Board. And we make sure that every casino, and now every online outlet, clearly has tools that are available to individuals who may not be able to control their spend. In the casinos, we've for a long time have had a self-exclusion list. We've had up to 14,000-15,000 people who have signed up to ban themselves from casinos, and that's no small step. They have to come in, they have to do it themselves, have their picture taken, and they attest that if they go in, and some of them have done this, gone into the casino while on that list, they will have their winnings confiscated, and they can be arrested and fined for trespassing. So we have that tool available. The casinos have also paid in millions and millions per year toward a problem gambling fund to make sure that there is counseling out there. So we had that handled. Then we look ahead to this new expansion. We have done similar with that. We have set up self-exclusion lists online. So individuals can now go in and ban themselves from online sports wagering, and they can ban themselves from going online for the casino-type games. They'll be able to ban themselves from the video gaming terminals and these truck stops that we're now putting up. In addition, there are tools available on the websites that will allow the individual to limit their time, limit their spend. It's a little like when you talk about parents and their kids' video games, where they limit it. Same thing here, where individuals can limit themselves to make sure that if they can't control their spend, that they have some tools to do it. Having said that, we're too new. We'll have to look down the road. I don't think anybody knows, given that this is, again, the larger expansions of this type of thing in the history of the United States. We'll have to look down the road and see exactly what has happened in the area of problem gambling.
All right. I'm going to try Eric Raskin, the managing editor of U.S. Bets, one more time. Eric, are you there?
I am.
All right. Yeah, I can hear you now. All right. So I don't know whether you got to hear our conversation with Doug Harbach from the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board, but you have written a lot about gaming across the country, and especially here in Pennsylvania, as some of the new gambling avenues have been rolled out. How is Pennsylvania viewed as a state when it comes to gaming?
Well, it's certainly an important one, and one that's, you know, making very significant progress currently. And I'm based in Pennsylvania myself, in the Philadelphia area, and I was one of those who, until recently, would take occasional trips across the border. I live just across from Trenton, across the border into New Jersey, in order to place some sports bets online and play a little online poker and things like that. So it's good that Pennsylvania is now catching up and giving people like me the option to do that from home, even though that is certainly not my main source of income. writing about the industry and editing is my main source of income, but I do like to play as well, and it's a great way to get a sense of what's going on in the industry. So Pennsylvania is certainly a hugely important state, a larger population than New Jersey by about 4 million people, so a lot of folks expect that Pennsylvania, especially as the online gambling expands, that Pennsylvania will be an important test state in terms of revealing to the whole nation how this can work, how much revenue this can generate, and all of those sort of things. So I did catch a bit of the conversation with Doug, not all of it, but I think he touched on this, the fact that the Pennsylvania Commission seems to be taking, you know, a very deliberate approach with things, cautious, moving slowly, not rushing into things. In contrast, things have moved faster in New Jersey, and so just time will tell, you know, which approach works better. But for now, that clearly seems to be Pennsylvania's approach, and as a resident of the state, I'm just glad to see things happening, sports betting and online casino and so forth being available with online poker coming soon.
But yet you have been, from articles that I've read that you've written, you've been somewhat critical, or at least you've questioned why Pennsylvania has been so cautious. Online poker, for example, is one that I know you've asked the question why it's taking so long. As you said, that Pennsylvania has been cautious, has been conservative, but what are your criticisms of Pennsylvania, or the questions that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just, and I guess I could direct these questions straight at Doug, but I'm not sure quite what the process is that makes it so that once someone has applied, once a casino applies, why it seems to take so many months to get up and running. And again, if that's largely a function of them being very careful in vetting everything and in making sure that all the geolocation is working so that people aren't able to play from outside the state borders, and in making sure that the age verification is working. All of, you know, that's all great. That is all a very valid reason for things moving more slowly than it did in New Jersey. But yeah, I mean, I don't have the answers to why online casino has started as a few sites. And online poker hasn't yet, and we haven't really gotten any clear indications of when online poker is coming. So maybe Doug would be able to speak to that more directly than I could, as to how soon that's coming. I assume it's not too far around the corner.
Doug,
no, the truth of the matter is we're not New Jersey. And this doesn't disparage New Jersey anywhere, and they've been very helpful to us. But New Jersey, of course, a lot of their revenue is so important to the city of Atlantic City in that area that I think they needed to get underway much quicker to try to start getting revenue generated. That was one thing. The other thing was New Jersey had one thing at a time. They had online. Then later they had one thing, which was sports wagering. We really had six things that have come at us at once. And with our staff, we've been trying to do it deliberately, but also be able to do it with our available staff, as I mentioned. And I think we've rolled it out as quick as possible. Once we've gotten to this hump where we've started to see more online sports wagering, more online casino games, I think you'll see this speed along pretty quickly. In regards to poker, when the casinos who have these licenses, and there are eight out there that have applied to offer poker, when they're prepared with their software and they're ready to go, we're ready to launch. And it's just one of those things where the current ones wanted to get up the casino type games and the slot machines up first and get those launched before that. So we're ready to do that. And I expect that will probably come as a launch, the first one maybe within the next month or so.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk, and I should mention that coming up at 10 this morning, President Donald Trump will have a press conference where he will talk about the weekend mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. That is coming up at 10 a.m. here on WITF. During this portion of the program, we're talking about the expansion of gambling here in Pennsylvania, a lot of different topics. Doug Harbach is our guest. He's a spokesman for the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board. Eric Raskin, managing editor of U.S. Bets, and we'll be speaking with Brett Smiley, sports bettor and editor of Sports Handle, here in just a moment. If you have questions or comments, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Before we get to Brett Smiley, Doug, let's talk about sports gaming here in Pennsylvania. What is available now, where, and how?
There are 9 sports books, land-based, that are now open in Pennsylvania. The closest one, of course, in central Pennsylvania is the book up at Hollywood Casino. 2 of those also happen to be at off-track betting parlors that are there. So we have some casinos and we also have off-track betting parlors. And we also have some other ones that will be opening up in the near future. Then there are 4 outlets that have launched in regards to online sports wagering. Those are available just like the casino games. Online, you have to be within the borders of Pennsylvania to play them. The software that Eric talked about, which will identify where your location is, this geolocation, if you leave a border and go to New Jersey or you go to Ohio or go to West Virginia, you will be shut off at that point from placing wagers. So that's one reason why he talked about Pennsylvania's possibility of great success, because when you're talking about players within your border, the bigger the state you are, then the more players that are available to participate in the games.
Mm-hmm. Brett Smiley is a sports bettor and editor of Sports Handle. Mr. Smiley, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. So how do you view Pennsylvania? And sports betting has been around a relatively short time here in Pennsylvania, but there are fantasy games as well. But how is Pennsylvania viewed as a sports wagering state?
Well, it's very early in the game. As both Eric and Doug indicated, it started with the retail sports books, and then there's a separate vetting process to get the technology up. But with regards to what Doug just said, population-wise, New Jersey is about 9 million, Pennsylvania about 12 million, and one of the early comparisons that people have been watching is the size of the betting handle in New Jersey versus Nevada, and that's just the total amount of dollars wagered. And after about a year so far, New Jersey is just about matched, and I mean that's a byproduct of obviously the sheer population and just more people coming online and availing themselves of some of the options they have. So, with that, just based on population alone, it's a curiosity, and I applaud Pennsylvania for being one of the early states to get it done, to give people a legal and safer outlet to make sports bets.
So I'm curious, as I said, you can bet in Pennsylvania now on the outcome of individual games, individual events, but there also is fantasy sports on a daily basis. What's more popular with the sports betting public?
Well, daily fantasy sports, that with DraftKings and FanDuel mainly. I don't know when that became available in Eric, do you know? When DFS became legal in PA?
Well, Doug. Daily Fantasy Sports has been It's been available for years. The first time that Pennsylvania taxed it and then we began to regulate it with some new rules to make it more fair to players was in May of 2018. And I will note that it has basically the same base as individuals for sports wagering and others that'll go online, except that is the one element of gambling in Pennsylvania that we regulate, that you're allowed to be 18 in order to participate.
In fact, Pennsylvania, are we the only state that allow 18?
No, there are others that are done, and it's been 18 years. Some states have looked at making that 21. The legislature decided to leave it at the 18-year-old age.
Mm-hmm. So, Brett, getting back to you, far as the sports betting public and what they prefer, what are their favorites?
It's really a matter of personal preference. There's a lot of crossover between people who play in the daily fantasy sports and people who bet on sports, and some dispute as to whether daily fantasy sports is gambling. But one of the most popular forms of sports wagering is just betting on the outcome alone of the game, as opposed to individual players. Are the Eagles going to beat the Giants and whatever?
They will. Yeah.
I'm a Giants fan. Ah. 4 years living in Philadelphia. So that was that was a challenging era in my life. But it's those type of wagers, on the game itself that are predominant. I think it's fair to say daily fantasy sports is more niche. It's it definitely penetrated the mainstream when they had that advertising onslaught. But sports betting, the marketplace stands to be a lot larger and thereby a greater revenue opportunity for the state.
How much of a revenue opportunity? And I don't know whether you could address Pennsylvania specifically, but sports betting in Nevada, it's been around for a long time. Supreme Court ruling a few years ago. You mentioned New Jersey. But how lucrative is sports betting?
Yeah, and Pennsylvania is certainly one of the curiosities from people who follow the industry closely, and that's because the tax rate on sports betting revenue is 34%, and then there's a local tax rate of about 2%, and Doug is him and his staff are implementing this. The legislator decided what the tax rate is, but compare it with Nevada, where it's 6.75%, and New Jersey, where it's either about 8 or 12%, whether it's in retail or online, and putting that together with the population size, it stands to be pretty substantial. I'm just pulling numbers out of thin air here, but let's say that all of the online sports books go online by the end of this year or at least during football season, it could be in the order of 20 something million or maybe 30 million within the first year.
So, Doug, let me ask you about those tax rates. I mean, from the industry itself, there have been criticisms or at least a little bit of grumbling about those tax rates. For individual bettors, they really don't care because they don't see that. But why so high?
Well, the legislature decided that was the rate they wanted if they wanted to get into it. The truth of the matter is we've had high tax rates on gaming compared to those other states that have been in a long time, whether it's New Jersey or whether it's Nevada. Both have single digits, let's say, on slot machines. We have a 54% tax on slot machines, which is why we've become number one in the United States. And I can tell you that since I was here at the beginning, before any casinos were licensed and opened, operators were lined up to get into Pennsylvania to open up casinos. The tax rate for the casinos did not push them away and say, don't do business here. I think that mentality carries over now with the legislature when they did the expansion and said, we can set this high, and because of our population base, they'll be lined up. They'll want to get in here. And the truth of the matter is just about every casino has decided to get into sports wagering, and most of the casinos also to get into online wagering. And I must mention, in regards to the sports wagering and the fantasy, there tends to be now this synergy going on because FanDuel, for example, has moved into sports wagering. They have a successful outlet in New Jersey, and they now have both a land-based sportsbook and an online product out of the Valley Forge Casino. And then just last week, DraftKings announced that they would also be opening up a sportsbook and online in concert with Penn National with their Meadows facility down in Washington County.
I want to switch gears here for a moment, Doug. I mentioned with the expansion of gambling with 2017 that part of that is that there would be slot machines available first of all, there'd be some mini casinos. They were called mini casinos because they don't have as many slots, as many table games. And that has, it's on its way. There have been licenses out there. Also, slot machines at some truck stops, eventually at airports. Let's start with the mini casinos. Where do we stand right now with that?
We held auctions last year. The Commonwealth garnered $127 million through the auction process alone to award five of these. We have already licensed one, the product in Berks County at the Morgantown exit on the Turnpike. We'll probably at our next meeting look at licensing another, and we continue, I think, within the near future, have all of these five facilities licensed and operated. The idea with that is they would also be owned by the casinos themselves. It's not new competition to casinos. It is their own satellite location with slot machines and table games. Then we are also going to open the auction back up because after we did five last year, it stopped. We didn't have any more bidders, so we stopped it. We're going to open it back up on September 4th and try to see if there's a market for some still available areas, because there are buffer zones around existing casinos that you can't build in, to try to protect them. And we'll see if the casino industry still wants to look at any other underserved areas where one of these mini casinos could locate. A couple of them, of course, proposals are at malls, like down in York County, but they want to maybe reinvigorate that whole facility by Penn National putting a casino in it.
As far as the slots at truck stops, Lancaster County in particular has been a county where there has been a lot of opposition. There have been some convenience stores, for example, Rutter's, for example, that has wanted to put some slot machines in a few of their stores, and there's been local opposition to it. Where do we stand with it? And it seems as though, I don't know, the news coverage seems to be when there is opposition. What about those who support it? Are there locations across the state that are saying, you know, yeah, we want that?
Yes. We have 62 truck stops that have applied to us. And remember, we're talking five machines. We're not talking about a large market that will be established here. Five machines at these truck stops. And they're pretty much, they say VGTs, they look like a slot machine. That's what they will really operate like. We've licensed final eight of those, and we should see within, again, a month or so, maybe the first launch of some of these machines at truck stops. We know that there were some areas that didn't want it. Lancaster County, for example, there was an option when it came to the mini casinos where the municipalities could opt out, and all 60 municipalities in Lancaster County took the effort to opt out and say, we don't want these. There was not the same option for the video gaming terminals. The only option to opt out was if you already had a casino in your county. 10 of the 12 that had them did opt out. They didn't want any more competition to those. A bill that was passed here a month or so ago, two legislators from Lancaster County, gave the option now for the municipalities to opt out individually and say, we don't want these type of gambling in our municipality. I believe, and we've been posting that publicly on our website, that list, when you see it this week, will probably be up to about 15 or 20 of the municipalities already who have said no. They have till August 31st.
Eric Raskin, in monitoring this situation, I mean, the news is good if you're looking at the amount of money that has been generated from gaming here in Pennsylvania. But with the expansion, there certainly will be more revenue that will be coming into the state. But is there ever a point where there's oversaturation?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think as long as, you know, where every site and every casino is generating positive revenue. I don't think we've reached that point. I think you look at the Atlantic City example, where it seems they've fluctuated over the last decade and a half as to how many casinos they could handle. So you went from 12 casinos at one point, several closed, you're back down to seven, a couple new ones opened up, you're back at nine. Maybe that's the right number. So following on that example, sure, certainly there, if you had, if you reach a certain point where there are just too many fighting for the same casino dollars, then you could hit that oversaturation point. I don't think we're seeing any signs that we're near it yet. And there's always sort of a worry from those who operate the land-based casinos. Some of them worry that online casino options will cut into their visitation, but history has not really proven that to be correct. It generally tends to be just an additional avenue while still the land-based casinos do fine. This was sort of the fear when online poker was first starting to spread, oh, nobody's going to come play poker in our poker rooms. Well, just as many people as may shy away from the poker rooms because they have the online option, there are just as many who online gets them into playing, and now they want to go try it out at a land-based casino. So just to get back to your question in terms of oversaturation, I don't think we're anywhere close to that yet, but with the potential for a dozen or so different online casinos battling for the customers, could there be some who don't really survive and don't make it, that may be too many? We'll see. At this point, with three or four, we're nowhere close to that yet.
We only have a minute or so left. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Doug, quickly, I know the Pennsylvania Lottery saw online gaming as competition. Now that people can buy lottery tickets online, actually filed suit. You don't see it that way?
Well, again, with a lawsuit hanging out there, we don't like to comment too much on that. And that's really a casino lawsuit. The casinos are saying this was unfair competition that we didn't envision and has been thrust upon us. And we think the product from the lottery looks too close to the online product that we're putting out there. And that was that's pretty much the basis for what they've been pushing in court.
So about 30 seconds to go. What can we look for when it comes to gaming here in Pennsylvania? We rolled out online, more sports betting. What can we look for?
Well, I think you're going to see continued rollouts of the online product. But I'll also mention that the casinos, the land-based, continue to enhance their facilities. I believe there's a groundbreaking this week for a brand-new hotel right at the Pittsburgh Casino, right beside Heinz Field. So we're going to see even more stuff happening at the land-based.
Doug Harbach is a spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board. Eric Raskin, managing editor of U.S. Bets, and Brett Smiley, sports better and editor of Sports Handle. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Coming up in just a minute or so, President Trump speaks about the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, Ohio, coming up in about 90 seconds or so. So be sure to stay tuned for that.